hear you moving in the wind. Pouring out your spirit once again. Jesus, I just want to hear you calling out my name, saying, well done, good and faithful one. Well done today.
We're in Revelation chapter 9 this morning. All right, the Apostle John found himself caught up into heaven before the throne of God. He sees Jesus take a scroll from the hand of God that had been sealed with seven seals. He breaks a seal, opens it, things happen. Breaks another seal, opens it a little further, things happen. As Jesus breaks each seal and unrolls the scroll a little further, events begin to take place on the earth during the time that we call the tribulation, this seven-year period on earth. You can say all hell breaks loose, but it's not out of control. It's planned. It's part of how God will bring judgment upon this world. And some of us cringe at that thought of judgment or the wrath of God. But I would remind you again, inside, we all are looking. We all want the wrong things in this world to be made right. Don't we? Don't you want things to be made right? Oh my gosh, some of you are in touch with some of the evil stuff because your work, your career takes you places where you touch, you get a glimpse of the evil that goes on in this world. And I know those of you who do that in your employment, oh, how you long for a day when God makes things right. Well, that's what's happening during this time. Now, built within the seventh seal, when he opens the seventh seal, there are seven trumpets. They're contained, I believe, within the seventh seal. And we're now looking at the last three trumpets. The last three trumpets bring such terrible things to the earth that they are called the three woes. Woe, woe, woe. And we're starting that fifth trumpet, which is the first of the woes. Now, it's possible that if you have been along with us on this study and you've gotten this far, I imagine there are times that you've gotten a little bit queasy. I'm talking to I was talking to a friend this morning, and he was saying that there was some stuff that we were doing that was very difficult for his daughter. And I get it. I get it. But you know what? I just got to tell you, just up front, this is, I guess in a sense, this would be rated R, the way this, the stuff that we're talking about. And if you think it's been bad so far, it's going to get worse. The woes are beginning. Chapter 9, verse 1. Then the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fallen from heaven to the earth. To him was given the key to the bottomless pit. So John sees this star who is fallen from heaven. Now, we've seen stars falling already. In chapter 8, verse 10, when the third angel blew his trumpet, there was a great star that fell. And we talked about possibilities of what it was called wormwood. And we've talked about meteors and satellites and all the kinds of possibilities that could cause these kinds of things to happen. But I've left out one of the possibilities of what the stars falling might talk about. In particular, in this instance, with this trumpet, you're going to understand what I'm talking about. This star is a little different. And in fact, we think that this star may be a person. It may be an angel. Why do I say that? If you remember back at the beginning of the book of Revelation, John has this vision of Jesus. He's walking among the candlesticks, which are the churches, and he's got in his hand seven what? Seven stars. That's the picture that John sees. And we're told in Revelation 1:20 that the seven stars are the angels of the seven churches. We even talked about the possibility that maybe because the idea of angel is simply the idea of a messenger, not necessarily limited to what we would call a created being that has the wings and the, all that kind of stuff. Sometimes the word angelos in Greek is used for human beings. And so we talked about in Revelation chapters 2 and 3 about the angels possibly even being the pastors, the leaders of the churches. That's a possibility. But here we see back in chapter 1, stars are connected to angels. And we're going to see this star fallen from heaven is given attributes of personality. He's given a key. He opens something. He does something. And in fact, later on, he's going to be called the angel of the pit. So it says this star has a star fallen from heaven. The word fallen, pipto, means to descend from a higher place to a lower place. What's kind of interesting about this word, I could give you a little grammar here in the Greek. It is what we call a perfect tense, which is a one of the three or four past tenses in Greek grammar. What the perfect tense means is that something happens in the past and the results are still going on into the present. There's another tense called the aorist tense, which means which something happened in the past and that's boom, a point in time, it just boom, it happened. But this perfect tense is something where the it happens in the past and the results, the actions still are going on today. Are you with me? That gives us a clue to the identity of this angel. We believe that this angel, this fallen angel, is Satan. And you're going to see other things that will tie this in, where you'll go, okay, I get it. By the end of it, hopefully by the end of the passage, you'll get this. We think this is a one of the pictures in Revelation of Satan. He's going to be called at the end of the paragraph. He's going to be given a Hebrew name, Abaddon, and a Greek name, Apollyon, which both mean the same thing, destroyer. And we'll tie all that together when we get there. Satan, okay. Satan's fall, this is important. Satan's fall has to do with the change of his status, not his address. I want to try to explain that a little bit. Some people are mistaken in thinking that Satan was kicked out of heaven and is no longer active in heaven. That is incorrect. Satan still has access to heaven. In fact, he's got a job there when we get to chapter 12. He has a job. He's called the accuser of the brethren. At night and day, he's in heaven accusing you of all the bad things that you do, which most of it's actually true. He doesn't even have to look for stuff. I mean, gosh, I give him stuff all the time, right? You know, all the time. When we talk about Satan being fallen, it's about his status changing, his attitude changing, as opposed to his address. He is no longer working for God, but now he is working against God. Satan used to be one of heaven's worship leaders. I don't know if you realize this. If you look through Ezekiel chapter 28, he used to be one of the cherubim in heaven, one of the ones helping heaven worship and honor God. But he rebelled against God, and he became an enemy of God. And so he still has access to heaven. God still allows him to have access. But he's now the enemy of God. Isaiah describes the fall in Isaiah 14. How you are fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning. How you are cut down to the ground, you who weakened the nations. For you have said in your heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars. I will sit on the mount of the congregation on the farthest sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Yet you shall be brought down to Sheol, to the lowest depths of the pit. We believe Satan's fall took place before the Garden of Eden, right? Because that's why he's there in the garden to tempt Eve, right? So his fall takes place before Eden. But in the book of Job, he still comes before God, presenting himself as one of the sons of God. So you see, even his fallenness refers to his status, not his address currently. Now, the address will change. It will, but not yet. Now, in here, I don't know if you noticed in Isaiah 14, I don't know if you noticed the emphasis on the word I, the letter I. It's I will do this, I will do that. That's kind of at the heart of Satan's rebellion. His status change is all about being self-centered. It's all about being self-centered. Friends, be careful when your life becomes self-centered. When your whole life is all around the big me. Now, I don't mean me, but I mean you, me. You know what I'm talking about? You say the me, and I say the me, and that's what we're talking about. But when your life becomes all about, and you know what? You'll see this when you get hurt, when somebody hurts your feelings. What do? They injured the me. Paul writes, and this is the English Standard Version. Paul writes in 1 Timothy 5:6, but she who is self-indulgent is dead even while she lives. Jesus said in Luke 9:23, I loved it because I think this was in the worship this morning. I think this is in the song. I can't remember which song it was. But as we were going through the songs, I'm checking off the points of my message. I just love the way God does this. Luke 9:23, then he said to them all, Jesus said, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. Be careful, gang, about the I, the me. Because look whose side you're on. Verse 2, this angel, it says he opened the bottomless pit, this star, this angel. Smoke arose out of the pit like the smoke of a great furnace. So the sun and the air were darkened because of the smoke of the pit. The sun and the air were darkened because of this smoke. It's kind of like, you know, what we get when the Santa Ana winds pick up and fires hit. And the sky is darkened because it's all filled with smoke and stuff. And you walk outside and you see the little ashes falling down and your car gets covered with stuff. You know, it's kind of like that. And things get darker because of the smoke. He says he opened the bottomless pit and smoke arose out of the pit. The bottomless pit. Let's talk for a few minutes about the bottomless pit. There is a place on earth, and I don't know whether it's actually in the physical realm or in the spiritual realm. I don't know exactly where it is located because I'm not convinced that heaven is necessarily in our dimension. I kind of sometimes think that heaven is in a different alternate universe. Now I'm sounding like a goofy guy. I don't know. But sometimes I kind of wonder about that. This bottomless pit, there is a place known as this bottomless pit or the abyss. The Greek word for bottomless, there's two words in the Greek here. There's the word for bottomless and there's the word for pit. The word for bottomless is abusos, which means literally the A means no, and busos comes from the word that means depth. No, there's no bottom to it. And so there's this place called the bottomless pit. So let's talk a little bit about the abyss. Not the movie, but the place. It is a destination for death. We believe, and I'm just going to give you a snippet of the scriptures, but we believe, especially from Romans 10:7, it says, who will descend in the abyss? That is to bring Christ up from the dead. We believe that specifically right now, when the unrighteous people die, not the believers die and immediately you're in heaven now, after the resurrection, since the resurrection of Jesus. We believe that when the unrighteous die, they go to the abyss. Their spirit, their soul, goes to the abyss. It's a place where the dead go. It is also a demon prison. When Jesus was about to cast out the demons from the guy named Legion, you know, the guy, the really whacked out crazy guy that ran around naked and they couldn't chain him and all this kind of stuff. The place that happened around Gadara, you know, that place on the right coast of the Sea of Galilee. You know, some of us have been there. Just before he did that, the demons said to him, they begged him that he would not command them to go into the abyss. That's the same word, abuso. Peter speaks of the demonic prison for rebellious angels. He said God did not spare the angels who sinned, but cast them down to hell and delivered them into the chains of darkness. We believe that this abuso will one day be, we don't believe, we know, it will one day be a temporary prison for Satan. You'll get that when we get to chapter 20. He will be chained in the abuso. In our text, we're going to see the demonic creatures being released with the key. They'll be coming up out of the abuso. And so we think that this place, abuso, is a demon, a prison for demons. It is also, we're going to see, the originating place for the Antichrist. Revelation 17 says, 17:8, the beast that you saw was and is not and will ascend out of the bottomless pit, that's abuso, and go to perdition. And then we'll get that more in depth when we get to chapter 17. Whoever the Antichrist, there will be an individual called the Antichrist that we would refer to as the Antichrist. He's not going to, hi, I'm Joe Antichrist. It's not going to be called that. But there's an individual who will fulfill that role. And whoever it turns out to be, there will be a connection with the demons from the abyss. Somehow, somewhere, there will be a connection with them. And we'll get to that more when we get through Revelations. Verse 3. Then out of the smoke, locusts came upon the earth, and to them was given power, as the scorpions of the earth have power. Locusts. Now, we're going to see that these aren't your average, everyday locusts, which are, you and I would call them grasshoppers. Yes, grasshopper. Yes, you do well, grasshopper. Wax on, wax off. You know, these are not going to be your regular, everyday, ordinary locusts or grasshoppers. But they have in fact, I wonder why in the world he calls them locusts, other than maybe that there's a swarm and maybe it might have something to do with their size. I don't know, because as he describes them, you're going, that's not a locust. That's the freakiest looking locust I've ever seen. I mean, wait till we look at this stuff. And it says, out of the smoke they were given power as the scorpions. You're going to see that these locusts have the ability to sting people like a scorpion. Real locusts don't sting. They might tickle, but they don't sting. These things will have a sting to them. It says, verse 4, they were commanded not to harm the grass of the earth or any green thing or any tree, but only those men who do not have the seal of God on their forehead. Now, grass, green, all the trees. See, that's what regular locusts love. So he's pointing out differences between the real locusts, normal locusts, and these crazy locusts. These things won't touch the grasses and the trees and anything green. Whereas normal locusts, that's exactly what they're looking for. That's what they eat up. And it says they will only affect those men who do not have the seal of God on their foreheads. Well, who has the seal of God on their foreheads? That's our Jewish evangelists that we saw back in chapter 7. The 144,000. Those are the ones that have the seal. Remember back in chapter 7, we read, it says, and do not harm the earth, the sea, or the trees till we have sealed the servants of our God on their foreheads. And I heard the number of those who were sealed, 144,000 of all the tribes of the children of Israel were sealed. So these fellows are going to have a protection because of the seal on their forehead, whatever it looks like. Maybe it's a stamp of approval. Maybe it's invisible. Who knows? But because of this seal, they're not going to be harmed by these locusts, these demonic locusts. Apparently, all humans on earth who are not sealed will be tormented by these things. That doesn't sound like fun to me. Does it sound like fun to you? No. I mean, wait till you see this stuff. It says, verse 5, and they were not given authority to kill, but to torment them for 5 months. Their torment was like the torment of a scorpion when it strikes a man. And the word for torment has to, I mean, it's like torture. It's like, you know, pulling fingernails off. It's like, I don't even want to get into the word. I didn't even put it in my notes because I decided it was just overboard. They're going to torment. It says they're going to torment them for 5 months. Now, it's interesting because the normal lifespan of a locust, of a grasshopper, is 5 months. From May to September, and then they're gone. It might be that these locust creatures are only around for 5 months. That's one version of what it might mean. It might mean that when they sting you, that the sting lasts for 5 months. I don't know. Language is a little bit flexible there, so you know, I don't know exactly what it'll be. It says it's like the torment of a scorpion. There are 1,400 species of scorpions, and I don't know if you realize this, but only there's a creepy one coming out now. Out of the 1,400 species of scorpions, only 25 of them. Only 25 species have venom that is toxic to man. So most scorpions are not the things you want to be careful of. Scorpion venom is a mixture of compounds like neurotoxins and enzyme inhibitors, and they work to kill or to paralyze the scorpion's prey so that, you know, it makes it stop and freeze, and then they can haul it off and eat it or something like that, just like a good horror movie. I'll warn you, you're going to have nightmares tonight. Well, I hope not. Verse 6, it says, in those days, men will seek death and will not find it. They will desire to die, and death will flee from them. Now, it may be, and I'll just give you some ideas of what this, the parameters of this, it could be that what it's talking about is that this is just incredibly painful, that what this sting of the scorpions are, and that people wish that it would kill them, but it just doesn't kill them. It could be something like that. Some people have come up with kooky ideas that people won't be able to die for 5 months. It's like, if you're, you know, and their theory is that if you're in a car accident and your head's lying gashed open, that you're not able to die. I don't know, but that's could be. Who knows? Freaky. So this is like one of the darkest chapters of the book. Isn't this lovely? Aren't you glad you came to church today? The shape of the locusts was like horses prepared for battle. On their heads were crowns of something like gold, and their faces were like the faces of men. When you use the word that's translated shape, hamayoma, figure, likeness, image, representation, John's doing his best to describe things to us. And so he's very careful that he inserts these words, like the word that's translated shape. I would actually probably translate it like. You're going to see a lot of words as. It's as this. It's like this. That's because this is a first century man describing things that could be simply demonic, or it could be that he's describing things in our 21st century, and how in the world does a first century man describe that? You know, who knows? So he's just giving you images is what he's doing. The image, the shape of the locust was like horses prepared for battle. On their heads were some crowns like horses prepared for the battle. Now, through the ages, horses have been used in war. You might think of a medieval knight charging towards you. You might think of the charge of the light brigade, or probably what John has in mind in his day. He's probably thinking of Egyptian chariots pulled by horses that are all decked out, dressed to kill, kind of the idea. They're like this. The shape was like horses prepared for battle. On their heads were crowns of something like gold. And again, notice the language. He doesn't say it is crowns of gold. It's just something like gold. So it may be yellow, it may be shiny, something like this. And it says their faces were like the faces of men. Now, I don't know exactly what that means. How were they like men's faces? Did they have eyes, nose, ears, mouth? I don't know. Did they actually have humanish faces? I don't know. You know, I know people like to use Photoshop and do all kinds of things. I don't know if you've seen some of the goofy Photoshop things people do where they put a man's face on a dog or something like that. I don't know. Who knows? He's trying his best to describe these things. Verse 8, they had hair like women's hair, and their face and their teeth were like lion's teeth. Hair like women's hair? I don't know. It's like, is it a puffy hairdo or something, you know, or is it down long? Or I don't know. I don't know. It's kind of hard because in this room there's like 500 hairstyles, so I don't know. I don't know. And it says, verse 9, they had breastplates like breastplates of iron. And actually the word for breastplates is simply the word for chest. So it could be talking about that they've got a chest of iron. It could be talking about some kind of armor on these things. Breastplates of armor, of iron. And it says the sound of their wings was like the sound of chariots with many horses running into battle. They make a noise. They're flying. They're flying like locusts. And they're making a noise that sounds like horses and chariots and here, I don't have no idea how the volume's going to come out. This is horses. It's not particularly Ben-Hur and the chariot race, but I thought I'd throw the picture up to give you an idea. So they're sounding something like that. Verse 10 says they have tails like scorpions. And there were stings in their tails. Their power was to hurt men 5 months. They have tails like scorpions. It was stingers. That's not a regular locust. This is out of the parameters of a locust. So, but there's something strange. They've got these stinging tails. Now, the shape of the locust was like, what? So what do you think these things are? I don't know. How's that? Some people like to think of them purely in terms of demonic beings, and that could be, that exact, really could be something. People have drawn all kinds of cool pictures. You know, you type in demon locust, you get this stuff up on Google Images. You know, you get these really cool things. Could be something like this. I don't know. Some people like to think of this in terms of the 21st century. Does this sound like something? Is there something out there that matches some of the description? Not exactly. But some people have suggested that it might be something like an Apache helicopter. You can kind of see, you know, the armor plating. Maybe the faces like men. Maybe it's because it's what's in the cockpit. Stingers. And the sound. I could describe that maybe like horses and chariots and something like that. Could be. Is it an Apache helicopter? I don't know. I don't know. And I'll tell you, I'm not gonna settle for one thing or the other. I'm just telling you what it could be because John's just painting pictures. All I know is that I'm just kind of glad I'm not gonna be here. How about you? You know, I will have bleacher seats up in heaven, but I really don't want to be here. And you know what? I don't know about you. I don't know if you have any friends, family, who are not believers. But you really don't want them to be here either, do you? No. Verse 11. It says, they had as king over them, which is another non-locust thing. Locusts don't have a leader. They're just hordes of locusts. This locust thing has a king over them, the angel of the bottomless pit. That's the guy, the star that's fallen, whose name in Hebrew is Abaddon, but in Greek he has the name Apollyon. This angel of the bottomless pit, this is the guy that's fallen, the guy that was given the key. These names, Abaddon and Apollyon, they're Greek and Hebrew words that mean the same thing, destruction or destroyer. And again, this seems to be a reference to Satan, who is a destroyer. Jesus said in John chapter 10, verse 10, "The thief does not come except to steal, to kill, and to destroy. I have come that they may have life and that they may have it more abundantly." Okay. Now, I'm going to give you something you file in the folder, bizarre. Okay, I'm going to go a little bit off the reservation here, and this is a Chuck Missler thing, so you know I'm really way off the reservation. Okay, but I just want to pass this on because this is fascinating. Another thing to ponder about this locust king. This is not the Lion King. This is the locust king. In our English version, in the book of Amos, chapter 7, verse 1, it reads like this. "Thus says the Lord God, thus the Lord God showed me, behold, he formed locust swarms at the beginning of the late crop. Indeed, it was the late crop after the king's mowings." Sounds pretty innocuous, pretty harmless. What's bizarre is when you look at the Greek translation of the Hebrew text. Remember, this is Old Testament written in Hebrew. You follow that so far? Well, about 200 years before Jesus, a bunch of Greek Jewish scholars down in Alexandria, Egypt, 70 of them got together and translated the Old Testament into their current language, which was Greek, which is what the New Testament is written in. That translation is called the Septuagint. Now, what's really bizarre is that the Septuagint translation of this verse, the end of it reads this. And when you take the Septuagint, translate it into English, it comes out like this. "A swarm of locusts was coming, and behold, one of the young, devastating locusts was Gog, the king." You know our Gog, the invasion of Gog, Magog? It's bizarre. I don't know how in the world these Greek scholars translated the phrase Gog the king, actually, because actually the Hebrew word is Gez. That's just a freaky thing. I'm just throwing that out so you can astound and amaze your friends at your knowledge of Bible prophecy. I'm not going to give you any conclusions. I just think that's really freaky, that this bizarre reference to the king of the locusts, and they named it Gog. Okay, I see your jaws are dropped or you're falling asleep on me. Okay, verse 12. "One woe is past, and behold, still two more woes are coming after these things." In other words, you think it's bad now, it's going to be even worse. Now, when it comes to things like demons, things get kind of scary. This is the stuff that nightmares are made of. Yes? Yes, no? Yes. Okay, watch the sound on this. I don't know how it's going to come out. I have to tell you that when we talk about demons and evil things, sometimes we go overboard. Let me demonstrate. This is going to be a little scary, I'll warn you. I got to say this, gang. Sometimes when we talk about things demonic, sometimes, I'm not going to set a rigid rule, sometimes we give the devil too much credit. And some of us are looking for a demon under every rock and behind every door when it isn't there. Sometime. I want to talk this morning about warfare. I want to talk about what God gives us as believers against demons and against the devil. But I kind of want to set it up by giving you that little laugh to remember that not everything bad is demonic. Sometimes it is. Sometimes it is. But sometimes it isn't. And sometimes we scare ourselves unnecessarily. Sometimes it isn't a demon that's tempting you. It's your own stupid, stinking flesh. Just stop it. Stop living for yourself. I mean, we talked about that. Now, that is satanic because Satan's the I guy. You know, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. But the part of you that responds to that is your own stinking flesh that I need to learn to deny, not Satan. Don't give him too much credit. So, let's get ready for battle. We have spiritual weapons, you and I. We have spiritual weapons. Paul writes in Ephesians 6, "Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil." When our military goes out to battle, they are equipped for war. We don't send them out in their gym shorts and t-shirts. We hopefully equip our men who are fighting for our country. We have warfare weapons to use. Now, that'll be a whole other study. I'm not going to take you through Ephesians 6. I want to talk about, I'm going to try to drop in some of these things as we get through these difficult, evil passages in Revelation. So I want to talk about three things that are a part of our weaponry. Okay? You ready? Three things. I hope you write these three words down. The first thing I want to say, I want to talk about is purity. My purity, your purity. Did you notice who the demonic locusts could not touch? Remember who? The 144,000, right? Because they had the seal of God on their foreheads. 1 John 5:18 says this, "We know that whoever is born of God does not sin, but he who has been born of God keeps himself," in other words, lives in purity, "and the wicked one does not touch him." Now, I find it interesting that in this passage, some of us love to quote that last part, "and the evil one doesn't touch him, toucheth him not," if we want to get King James-ish on ourselves. The devil toucheth us not. But gang, I find it interesting that in the same sentence, he talks about not sinning, about keeping ourselves, about saying no to sin, living a life of purity. I think, gang, and I'm just talking to you out of 40 years of walking with Jesus, this is real. This is the real deal. This is the real truth. Sometimes when we yield to sin, it's like we're installing, it's like we got a carpenter installing a handle on us. Something that Satan can grab a hold on and he holds tight. And when I've got that little playful, innocent little sin going on in my life, it's like I'm establishing a handle here, and then I stick one over here, and I wonder why my life is up and down and tossed and turned, and I have such trouble. Well, buddy, you know, I don't think Satan can possess you, but man, he can sure get a hold of you and grab a hold of that handle and spin you anytime he wants to. Do you know what I'm talking about? Is this ringing any bells to you? You think about your sin? I don't want to think about your sin. I got my own sins to think about and worry about and to work on. But when you yield to it, Don't you know he's got a hold on you? We talk about him being the accuser of the brethren. And I'll tell you, I really do believe it's true that most of the time, 90% of his accusations have truth in them. Yes, I did lust. Yes, I did do that screwy thing. Yes, I did say that horrible thing to my wife. And I have no excuse. How can I have an excuse? Because I did it, and he's got a handle on me. But gang, when I learn to say no to sin, instead of a handle, it's like God makes me a Teflon frying pan. Nothing sticks to it. You understand what I'm saying? We'll see some of this principle morphed when we get into Revelation 12, and you'll get some more ideas of how we have victory over Satan. But, gang, purity is so important. There's a reason why God says no. Because he loves you so much. He doesn't want Satan messing with you. He doesn't, you know, Satan can try to grab onto you, but he just slides right off. Because I'm learning to say no. Gang, you and I will sin. But the more we learn to sin less and to obey him, and you know, some of you, you know, I hit on things and you've got your reasons and your excuses for not doing them. But I just want to remind you, you've got that handle in your life. Go to the Teflon mode. Teflon's good. I like cooking with Teflon. I don't have to scrape the pan so much. It just slides right off. When we get to Revelation 14 and we look at the 144,000, the ones that the scorpions couldn't touch, you know what they have a reputation for? Purity. They have a reputation for purity. I believe they're not just protected by the seal, but these are men, they're men who have learned to live pure lives. Second thing I want to talk about, I want to talk about prayer. And specifically, I want to talk about the authority that Jesus gives us to bind the devil. Jesus said to Peter, he said, I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. That's interesting. Satan's been given the keys to this pit. Jesus has given Peter and us the keys to the kingdom of heaven. And whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. And whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. I think that one of the ways these keys are used is when we face the demonic with the authority of Jesus and we learn to bind it. We bind it here on earth in the natural realm, and it is bound in heaven, in the spiritual realm. You see that? That's what he's talking about. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. Who has access to heaven? Who's one of the people that has access to heaven? Satan does. You bind him on earth, and he will be bound in heaven. Now, you see Jesus demonstrating this authority in Matthew 12. For this is one of many occurrences. Then one was brought to him who was demon-possessed, blind and mute, and he healed him so that the blind and mute man both spoke and saw. You see the disciples using the same authority. Doesn't have to use the words gang. Doesn't have to use the words binding. This is just what we do. The disciples use the same authority after Jesus gives it to them. This is fascinating. Luke chapter 10, it says, then the 70, he gives them this authority. I give you authority over demons. And they're out for their two-week mission trip. And they come back. Some are coming back from Hungary. Some are coming back from Russia. Some are coming back from Tijuana. Some are coming back from the outreach, you know, and the food outreach. And they come back, return with joy, saying, Lord, even the demons are subject to us in your name. We did just what you said, and the demons are subject to us. And he said to them, look at this, I saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven. They're binding him on earth, and in heaven, it zaps him temporarily. Not permanently, because he's back at it again, but he's affected when you act. I think that's what Jesus is talking about here. Now, You know, if you were here a Thursday night a week ago, Daniel Grant slipped that little story in on us about, you know, confronting somebody that they thought was demon-possessed. And you may encounter something like that. There's been a few times that I've encountered something like that. But it's going to be more often than not, gang, that it will be in prayer. Prayer over your friends, prayer over your situation, prayer targeting the other end of the world. Pray for Daniel and Laura. It will be in prayer that we engage in this. Last thing I want to talk about is Jesus. That's best of all. Because, gang, you've got Jesus on your side. That's the best thing you have when it comes to being ready for battle. John writes, 1 John 4:4. John says, You are of God, little children, and have overcome them because he who is in you is greater than he who is in the world. You've got Jesus on your side. You know, sometimes your cell phone's going to ring, and you look at the caller ID. Can you read the caller ID? You know, now it may not exactly say Satan, but you know what I'm talking about. Because he's got your number, doesn't he? You know, and sometimes, whether it's a temptation or it's a person or it's a situation, and he calls. Greg Laurie likes to say that Jesus, you know, the knocks at the door, you open the door, and there's Satan, and you turn over your back and you say, Lord, it's for you. That's what you do. When you feel evil, gang, you call out on Jesus. He's the one who died on the cross. He's the one who crushed Satan on the head when he died on the cross. He's got the help that you need. You don't need to be afraid of what's up ahead. You know, we look at all this stuff and it's gonna get worse. Darn it. Gonna get worse in this book. I wish we'd get to chapter 19 really quick, because in chapter 19 it gets all better really good. You know what? I think next week I'll finish chapter 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, and 18. All in one chapter. How about that? No. You don't need to be afraid of what's ahead. You call on him. The disciples said they're subject to us in your name. You call on the name of Jesus. Let's stand and pray.